corpses in the moving crowd. "He's not here," she told herself again. But in that instant, she saw him again, swaggering through the crowd, flanked by two friends. Brian. She froze, watching as the three of them moved toward an open table, Brian muscling his way through the crowd the way he did on the lacrosse field. For a second, she couldn't believe it. All she could think was, "Really? You followed me here, too?" She felt a flush rising in her cheeks. She was with her friends, off campus. What was he thinking? She'd made it plain that she didn't want to see him. She'd told him point blank that she didn't want to talk to him. She was tempted to march right up and tell him, again, right to his face, that it was over. But she didn't, because she knew that it wouldn't make any difference. Marcia was right. Brian believed that if he could just talk to her, he could change her mind. Because he thought that at his most charming and apologetic, he was irresistible. She'd forgiven him before, after all. Why not again? Turning away, she worked her way through the crowd toward Marcia, thanking God she'd left the tables when she had. The last thing she needed was for him to saunter up, feigning surprise at finding her. Because no matter what the facts were, she'd end up being painted as the heartless one. Why? Because Brian was the Mary Kate of his fraternity. An all-American lacrosse player blessed with startlingly good looks and a wealthy investment banker father, Brian ruled their social circle effortlessly. Everyone in the sorority revered Brian, and she knew for a fact that half the girls in the house would hook up with him given the slightest encouragement. Well, they could have him. Sophia continued to weave through the crowd as the band finished one song and rolled into the next. She glimpsed Marcia and Ashley near the dance floor, talking to three guys wearing tight jeans and cowboy hats, who she guessed were a couple of years older than them. Sophia made her way in that direction, and when she reached for Marcia's arm, her roommate turned, looking almost flustered. Or, more accurately, drunk.
"Oh, hey!"
she drawled, dragging out the words. She maneuvered Sophia forward.
"Guys, this is my roommate Sophia, and this is Brooks, and Tom, and..."
Marcia squinted at the guy in the middle.
"Who are you again?"
"Terry,"
he offered. "Hi," Sophia said, the word automatic. She turned back to Marcia. "Can I talk to you alone?"
"Right now?"
Marcia frowned. She cut her eyes toward the cowboys as she turned to face Sophia, not bothering to hide her irritation.
"What's up?"
"Brian's here,"
Sophia hissed. Marcia squinted at her, as if trying to make sure she'd heard her right before finally nodding. The two of them retreated to a place farther removed from the dance floor. It wasn't quite as deafening, but Sophia still had to raise her voice to be heard.
"He followed me, again."
Marcia peered over Sophia's shoulder.
"Where is he?"
"Back by the tables with everyone else from school. He brought Jason and Rick."
"How did he know you'd be here?"
"It's not exactly a secret. Half the campus knew we were coming tonight." As Sophia fumed, Marcia's interest flickered to one of the guys she'd been talking to. Then she turned back to Sophia with a trace of impatience.
"Okay, he's here,"
she shrugged.
"What do you want to do?"
"I don't know," Sophia said, crossing her arms.
"Did he see you?"
"I don't think so," she said. "I just don't want him to start anything."
"Do you want me to go talk to him?"
"No," Sophia shook her head. "Actually, I don't know what I want."
"Then just relax. Ignore him. Hang with me and Ashley for a while. We don't have to go back to the tables. Maybe he'll leave. And if he finds us here, I'll just start flirting with him. Distract him."
Her mouth curved into a provocative smile.
"You know he used to have a thing for me."
"Before you, I mean." Sophia pulled her arms tighter. "Maybe we should just go." Marcia waved a hand.
"How? We're an hour from campus, and neither of us has a car here. We rode with Ashley, remember? And I know for a fact that she's not going to want to leave."
Sophia hadn't thought of that.
"Come on," Marcia cajoled. "Let's get a drink. You'll like these guys. They're in graduate school at Duke."
Sophia shook her head. "I'm not really in the mood to talk to any guys right now."
Then what do you want to do?
Sophia caught sight of the night sky at the far end of the barn and suddenly felt the overwhelming desire to get out of this sweaty, densely packed scene. I think I just need some fresh air. Marcia followed her gaze, then looked at Sophia again.
Do you want me to come with you?
No, that's okay. I'll find you again. Just hang around here, okay?
Yeah, sure,
Marcia agreed with obvious relief.
But I can go with you.
Don't worry about it. I'm not going to be long. As Marcia headed back to her new friends, Sophia started toward the rear of the barn, the crowd thinning out as she moved farther from the dance floors and the band. A few men tried to catch her attention as she maneuvered past them, but Sophia pretended not to notice, refusing to be sidetracked. The oversized wooden doors had been propped open, and as soon as she stepped outside, she felt a wave of relief wash over her. The music wasn't nearly as loud, and the crisp autumn air felt like a cool balm on her skin. She hadn't realized how hot it was inside the barn. She looked around, hoping to find a place to sit. Off to the side was a massive oak tree, its gnarled limbs stretching in all directions, and here and there people were standing in small groups, smoking and drinking. It took a second for her to realize that they were all inside a large enclosure bounded by wooden rails radiating from either side of the barn. No doubt it had once been a corral of sorts. There weren't any tables. Instead, knots of people mostly sat on or leaned against the rails. One group perched on what she thought was an old tractor tire. Farther off to the side, a solitary man in a cowboy hat stared out over the neighboring pasture, his face in shadow. She wondered idly whether he too was in graduate school at Duke, but she doubted it. Somehow, cowboy hats and Duke graduate school just didn't go together. She started toward an empty section of the railings a few fence posts down from the solitary cowboy. Above her, the sky was as clear as a glass bell, the moon hovering just over the distant tree line. She propped her elbows on the rough wooden rails and took in her surroundings. Off to the right were the rodeo stands, where she had watched the bull riding contests earlier. Directly behind them was a series of small enclosed pastures, which held the bulls. Though the corrals weren't lit, a few of the arena lights were still on, casting the animals in a spectral glow. Behind the pens were 20 or 30 pickups and trailers, surrounded by their owners. Even from a distance, she could see the glowing tips of the cigarettes some of them were smoking, and hear the occasional clink of bottles. She wondered what the place was used for when the rodeos weren't in town. Did they use this place for horse shows? Dog shows? County fairs? Something else? There was a desolate, ramshackle feel to the place, suggesting that it sat empty much of the year. The rickety barn reinforced that impression, but then, what did she know? She'd been born and raised in New Jersey. That's what Marcia would have said anyway. She'd been saying it since they were sophomores, and it had been funny at first, then had worn thin after a while, and now was funny again. A kind of long-running joke just between the two of them. Marcia was from Charlotte, born and raised only a few hours from Wake Forest. Sophia could still remember Marcia's bewildered reaction when she said she'd grown up in Jersey City. For all intents and purposes, Sophia might as well have said she'd been raised on Mars. Sophia had to admit that Marcia's reaction hadn't been completely off base. Their backgrounds couldn't have been more different. Marcia was the second of two. Her father was an orthopedic surgeon, and her mother was an environmental attorney. Her older brother was in his last year of law school at Vanderbilt, and although the family wasn't on the Forbes list, it definitely resided comfortably in the upper crust. She was the kind of girl who took equestrian and dance lessons as a girl, and who received a Mercedes convertible on her 16th birthday. Sophia, on the other hand, was the child of immigrants. Her mother was French, her father was from Slovakia, and they'd arrived in the country with little more than the money they had in their pockets. Though educated, her father was a chemist, her mother a pharmacist, their English skills were limited, and they spent years working menial jobs and living in tiny, run-down apartments until they saved enough to open their own delicatessen. Along the way, they had three more kids. Sophia was the oldest, and Sophia grew up working alongside her parents at the deli after school and on weekends. The business was moderately successful, enough to provide for the family, but never much more than that. Like many of the better students in her graduating class, Until a few months before graduation, she'd expected to attend Rutgers. She'd applied to Wake Forest on a whim because her guidance counselor had suggested it, but never in a million years could she have afforded it, nor did she really know much about the place beyond the beautiful photos that were posted on the university's website. But surprising no one more than her, Wake Forest had come through with a scholarship that covered tuition, and in August, Sophia had boarded the bus in New Jersey, bound for a virtually unknown destination where she'd spend much of the next 4 years. It had been a great decision, at least from an educational standpoint. Wake Forest was smaller than Rutgers, which meant the classes were too, and the professors in the art history department were passionate about teaching. She'd already had one interview for an internship at the Denver Art Museum, and no, they hadn't asked a thing about her role at Chi Omega, which she thought had gone well, but she hadn't heard back yet. Last summer, she'd also managed to save enough to buy her first car. It wasn't much. An 11-year-old Toyota Corolla with more than 100,000 miles on the engine, a dent in the rear door, and more than a few scrapes. But for Sophia, who'd grown up walking or riding the bus everywhere, it was liberating to be able to come and go as she pleased. At the railing, she grimaced. Well, except for tonight, anyway. But that was her fault. She could have driven, but... why did Brian have to come here tonight? What did he think was going to happen? Did he honestly believe that she'd forget what he'd done to her? Not once or twice, but three times? That she'd take him back just as she had previously? The thing was, she didn't even miss him. She wasn't going to forgive him, and if he hadn't been following her, she doubted she'd be thinking about him at all. Yet he was still able to ruin her night. And that bothered her. Because she was allowing it to happen. Because she was giving him that power over her. Well, not anymore, she decided. She'd head back inside and hang with Marcia and Ashley and those Duke boys. And so what if Brian found her and wanted to talk? She'd simply ignore him. And if he tried to interfere with her good time? Well, she might even kiss one of the guys to make sure he knew she had moved on. Period. Smiling at the image, she turned from the railing, bumping into someone and almost losing her balance. Oh, excuse me, she said automatically as she reached out to brace herself. As her hand met his chest and she looked up, she felt a burst of recognition and she recoiled.
Whoa,
Brian said, catching her by the shoulders. By then, she'd regained her balance, and she assessed the situation with a sickening sense of predictability. He'd found her. They were face to face and alone together. Everything she'd been trying to avoid since the breakup. Great.
Sorry about sneaking up on you like that.
Like Marcia's, his words were slurred, which didn't surprise her. Brian never missed an opportunity to tie one on.
I didn't find you at the tables, and I had a hunch that you might be out here.
What do you want, Brian? She demanded, cutting him off. He flinched visibly at her tone. But as always, he recovered quickly. Rich people, spoiled people, always did.
I don't want anything,
he said, tucking one hand into the pocket of his jeans. When he staggered slightly, she realized he was well on his way to being falling down drunk. Then why are you here?
I saw you out here all alone and thought I'd come over to make sure you were doing okay.
He cocked his head, trying on his I'm-so-wholesome routine, but his bloodshot eyes undermined his efforts. I was fine until you got here. He raised an eyebrow.
Wow, that's harsh.
I have to be. You've been following me like a stalker. He nodded, acknowledging the truth of her words, and of course to show that he accepted her disdain. He could probably star in a video entitled How to Get Your Ex-Girlfriend to Forgive You Again.
I know, he offered right on cue. I'm sorry about that.
Are you? He shrugged.
I didn't want it to end the way it did. And I just wanted to tell you how ashamed I am about everything that happened. You didn't deserve it, and I don't blame you for ending it. I realize that I've been...
Sophia shook her head, already tired of listening to him. Why are you doing this?
Doing what?
This, she said. This whole phony show. Coming out here, pretending to be so abject and apologetic, what do you want? Her question seemed to catch him off guard.
I'm just trying to say sorry.
For what? She asked. For cheating on me for the third time? Or for lying to me ever since I've known you? He blinked.
Come on, Sophia, he said. Don't be like this. I don't have any kind of agenda. Really, I just don't want you to go through the whole year feeling like you have to avoid me. We've been through too much for that.
Despite the occasional slurring, he sounded almost credible.
Almost.
You don't get it, do you? She wondered if he honestly thought she'd forgive him. I know I don't have to avoid you. I want to avoid you. He stared at her, plainly confused.
Why are you acting like this?
Are you kidding?
After you broke up with me, I knew I'd made the biggest mistake of my life. Because I need you. You're good for me. You make me a better person. And even if we can't be together, I'd like to think we could get together and talk sometime. Just talk. The way we used to. Before I screwed things up.
She opened her mouth to reply, but his bravado left her speechless. Did he really think she'd fall for this again?
Come on, he said, reaching for her hand. Let's get a drink and talk. We can work through this.
Don't touch me! Her voice rang out sharply.
Sophia!
She slid farther down the railing away from him. I said don't touch me! For the first time, she glimpsed a flash of anger in his expression as he lunged for her wrist.
Calm down!
She yanked her arm, trying to free it. Let go of me! Instead, he drew close enough for her to smell the stale beer on his breath.
Why you always have to make such a scene? He demanded.
As she struggled to break free, she looked up at him and felt a cold blade of fear. This wasn't a Brian she recognized. His brow was furrowed, almost wrinkled, his jaw ropey and distended. She froze, leaning away from his hot, labored breath. Later, she would recall only how paralyzed with fear she was, until she heard the voice behind her.
You need to let her go, the voice said.
Brian looked over and back to her again, squeezing harder.
We're just talking, he said,
his teeth clenched, the muscle in his jaw flexing.
It doesn't look like you're just talking to me, the voice said. And I'm not asking you to let her go. I'm telling you.
There was no mistaking the warning in the tone, but unlike the adrenaline-charged exchanges she'd sometimes witnessed at the frat houses, this stranger's voice sounded calm. It was a beat before Brian even registered the threat, but he clearly wasn't intimidated.
I've got it handled. Why don't you mind your own business? Last chance, came the voice. I don't want to have to hurt you, but I will.
Too nervous to turn around, Sophia couldn't help noticing bystanders outside the barn beginning to turn their way. From the corner of her eye, she watched two men rise from the tractor tire and start toward them. Another pair pushed off a section of the railing, their hats shadowing their faces as they approached. Brian's bloodshot eyes flickered toward them, then he glared over Sophia's shoulder at the man who had just spoken.
What? You calling in your friends now? I don't need them to deal with you,
the stranger said, his voice even. At the comment, Brian pushed Sophia aside, releasing the vice-like grip on her arm. He turned and took a step toward the voice.
You seriously want to do this?
When she turned, it was easy to understand the reason for Brian's swagger. Brian was 6.5 feet tall and over 200 pounds. He worked out at the gym 5 times a week. The guy who'd threatened him was more than 1/2 foot shorter and wiry. He wore a cowboy hat, though it had definitely seen better days.
Go along now,
the cowboy said, backing up a step.
There's no reason to make this any worse.
Brian ignored him. With surprising speed, he lunged toward the smaller man, his arms wide, intending to take him down. She recognized the move, had watched Brian flatten countless people on the lacrosse field, and knew exactly what was going to happen. He'd lower his head and drive hard with his legs, felling the other man like an axed tree. And yet, while Brian did just what she'd expected, it didn't end the way she'd seen it happen before. As Brian closed in, the man kept one leg in place as he leaned to the opposite side, his arms sweeping as he used Brian's momentum to throw him off balance. A moment later, Brian was face down in the dirt with the smaller man's scuffed cowboy boot on the back of his neck.
"Just calm down now," the cowboy said.
Brian began to struggle beneath the boot, preparing to push himself up, but with a quick hop, while still keeping one boot planted firmly on Brian's neck, the cowboy's other foot slammed down on Brian's fingers, then quickly moved aside. On the ground, Brian retracted his hand and screamed while the boot on his neck pressed down even harder.
"Stop moving, or it's only going to get worse."
The cowboy's words were clear and slow, as if he were addressing a dimwit. Still stunned by the rapidity of the events, Sophia stared at the cowboy. Recognizing him as the figure she'd noticed standing alone by the railing when she'd first walked out, she noted that he had yet to look at her. Instead, he seemed intent on keeping his boot in the proper place, as if warily pinning a rattlesnake to the canyon floor. Which, in a way, he was. On the ground, Brian began to struggle again. Again, his fingers were stomped, while the other boot remained fixed on his neck. Brian stifled a wail, his body gradually growing still. Only then did the cowboy look up at Sophia, his blue eyes piercing in the reflected lights outside the barn.
"If you want to go," he offered, "I'll be glad to hold him for a bit."
He sounded unconcerned, as if the circumstances were nothing out of the ordinary. As she struggled for an appropriate response, she took in the messy brown hair poking out from beneath his hat and realized that he wasn't much older than her. He looked vaguely familiar, but not because she'd seen him at the railing earlier. She'd seen him somewhere else, maybe inside, but that wasn't quite right. She couldn't put her finger on it. "Thanks," she said, clearing her throat. "But I'll be okay." As soon as he heard her voice, Brian resumed his struggle. Again, it ended with Brian jerking his hand back amid howls of pain.
"You sure?"
the cowboy asked.
"I'm sensing he's a bit angry."
That's an understatement, she thought. She had no doubt that Brian was furious. She couldn't suppress the tiniest of smiles. "I think he's learned his lesson." The cowboy seemed to evaluate her answer.
"Maybe you should check with him,"
he suggested, pushing his hat back on his head.
"Just to make sure."
Surprising herself, she smiled at him before leaning over. "Are you going to leave me alone, Brian?" Brian gave a muffled yelp.
"Get him off me! I'm going to kill him!"
The cowboy sighed, putting even more pressure on the back of Brian's neck. This time, Brian's face was pressed hard into the dirt. She turned to the cowboy, then back to Brian again. "Is that a yes or a no, Brian?" she asked. The cowboy laughed, revealing even white teeth and a boyish grin. Although she hadn't noticed it earlier, four other cowboys had surrounded them in the meantime, and Sophia wondered if this whole incident could become any more surreal. She felt as though she'd stumbled onto the set of an old western, and all at once, she realized where she'd seen this cowboy before. Not inside the barn, but earlier, at the rodeo. The one Marcia had called Eye Candy. The bull rider who'd won it all.
"You doing okay, Luke?"
one of the circle asked.
"Need a hand?"
The blue-eyed cowboy shook his head.
"I got it for now. But if he don't stop wiggling, his nose is gonna get broke whether he likes it or not."
She looked at him. "You're Luke?" He nodded.
"You?"
"Sophia." He tipped his hat.
"Nice to meet you, Sophia."
Grinning, he glanced down at Brian again.
"You gonna leave Sophia alone if I let you up?"
Defeated, Brian stopped moving. Slowly but surely, the pressure eased off his neck, and Brian cautiously turned his head.
"Get your boot off my neck!"
he grunted, his expression simultaneously surly and fearful. Sophia shifted from one foot to the other. "You should probably let him up," she said. After a beat, Luke lifted his boot and stepped back. In that instant, Brian leapt to his feet, his body tense. His nose and cheek were scraped, and he had dirt in his teeth. As the circle of other riders tightened, Brian turned from one bull rider to the next, his head swiveling back and forth. Though drunk, Brian wasn't stupid, and after glaring at Sophia, he took a step backward. The five cowboys stayed put, appearing not to care one way or the other, but Sophia sensed it was only an illusion. They were prepared for whatever Brian might do, but Brian again took another step backward before pointing at Luke.
"You and I aren't finished yet," he spat. "You understand that?"
He let the words hang before focusing on Sophia. There was anger in his expression and betrayal as well, and with that, he turned and started back toward the barn. Three. Luke. Ordinarily, he wouldn't have gotten involved. Hell, anyone who went to bars had been confronted with this scenario before. The events unfolding with an almost ridiculous predictability. A couple enjoying a night out, both of them drinking, when, no doubt fueled by too much booze, an argument begins. One starts yelling at the other yells back, the anger escalates, and 9 times out of 10, the man ends up grabbing the woman. By the hand, the wrist, the arm, whatever. And then? That's where things got trickier. A few years ago, when he was riding in Houston, he'd been in much the same situation. He'd been decompressing at a local bar when a man and woman began arguing. After a minute or so, with their voices rising, it turned physical, and Luke had intervened then, too. Only to be turned on by both the man and the woman, each screaming at him to leave them the hell alone and to mind his own business. The next thing he knew, the woman was clawing at his face and latching onto his hair while he scuffled with the man. Fortunately, no real damage had been done. Others had quickly intervened to separate the three of them. Luke had walked away, shaking his head and swearing that from then on, he would stick to his own affairs. Hell, if they wanted to act like idiots, why try to stop them? Which was exactly what he'd intended to do in this instance. He hadn't even wanted to join the after party in the first place, but he'd been talked into it by a few fellow riders who wanted to celebrate his comeback and drink to his victory. He'd ended up winning the event after all, both the short go and the event total. Not because he'd ridden particularly well, but simply because no one else had completed his ride in the final round. He won essentially by default, but sometimes that was how things played out. He was glad no one had noticed his hands shaking beforehand. The tremors were a first for him, and although he wanted to believe that it was because of the long hiatus, he knew the real reason. His mom did, too, and she'd made it clear that she opposed his return to the ring. Ever since he'd mentioned the possibility of riding again, things had been strained between them. Ordinarily, he'd call her after he finished an event, but not tonight. She wouldn't care that he'd won. Instead, he'd simply texted her after the event that he was fine. She hadn't responded. After a couple of beers, he was only just feeling the acidic rush of fear ebb away. He'd retreated to his truck after each of his first two rides, needing to be alone and settle his nerves. Despite his advantageous standings, he'd actually considered forfeiting. But he'd crushed that instinct and gone back out for his last ride of the night. He'd heard the announcer talking about his injury and subsequent hiatus as he was getting ready in the chute. The bull he'd drawn, a rank bull named Hump and Dump, spun wildly as soon as he broke free, and Luke had barely been able to hold on until the buzzer. He'd landed hard after freeing himself from the wrap, but there'd been no damage done, and he'd waved his hat while the crowd roared its approval. After that came the back slaps and congratulations, and he couldn't very well say no when so many people wanted to buy him a drink. He wasn't ready to go home yet anyway. He needed some time to unwind, to replay the rides in his head. In his mind, he was always able to make the adjustments he hadn't been able to during the ride, and he needed to think through those steps if he planned to continue. Though he'd won, his balance was nowhere near what it once had been. He still had a long way to go. He was replaying the second ride when he first noticed the girl. It was hard not to appreciate the cascade of blonde hair and deep-set eyes. He had the sense that, like him, she was wrapped up in her own thoughts. She was pretty, but beyond that, there was something wholesome and natural about her appearance. The kind of girl who probably looked equally at home in jeans or a formal gown. This was no dolled-up buckle bunny hoping to hook up with one of the riders. They were everywhere on tour and easy to find. A pair of them had sidled up to him in the barn and introduced themselves earlier, but he'd had no interest in encouraging them. He'd had a few one-night stands over the years, enough to know they inevitably left him feeling empty. But the girl on the railing interested him. There was something different about her, though he couldn't pinpoint what. Maybe, he thought, it was the unguarded, almost vulnerable way she stared into the distance. Whatever it was, he sensed that right now what she really needed was a friend. He considered going over to talk to her, but he pushed aside the idea as he focused on the bulls in the distance. Despite the arena lights, it was too dark to make out all the details, but he searched for Big Ugly Critter anyway. They would forever be linked, he thought, and he wondered idly whether the bull had already been loaded up. He doubted the owner of the bull had planned to drive all night, which meant the animal was here, but it still took some time before he was able to locate him. It was while he was staring at Big Ugly Critter that the drunk ex-boyfriend had walked up. It was impossible not to overhear their conversation, but he reminded himself not to get involved. And he wouldn't have, at least until the huge brute had grabbed her. By then it was obvious she didn't want anything to do with him, and when he heard the blonde's anger give way to fear, Luke found himself pushing away from the railing. He knew his decision would probably backfire on him, but as he stepped toward the two of them, he thought again of the way she'd looked earlier, and he knew he didn't have a choice. Luke watched as the drunk ex-boyfriend stalked off, and he turned to thank his fellow riders for coming over. One by one, they drifted away, leaving Luke and Sophia alone. Above them, the stars had multiplied in the ebony sky. In the barn, the band finished one song and eased into another, an older classic by Garth Brooks. With a deep sigh, Sophia let her arms fall to her sides, the autumn breeze lifting her hair gently as she turned to face him.
I'm sorry you were dragged into all this, but I want to thank you for what you did, Sophia said, a little sheepish.
Closer now, Luke registered the unusual green color of her eyes and the soft precision of her speech, a sound that made him think of faraway places. For a moment, he found himself tongue-tied.
I was glad to help, he managed.
When he said nothing more, she tucked a loose strand of hair behind her ear.
He's not always as crazy as you probably imagine he is. We used to go out, and he's not too happy I broke up with him.
I figured,
Luke said.
Did you hear everything?
Her face was a mixture of embarrassment and fatigue.
It was kind of hard not to.
Her lips tightened.
That's what I thought.
If it makes you feel any better, I promise to forget,
he offered. She gave a genuine laugh, and he thought he heard relief in it. I'm going to try my best to forget all about it, too, she said.
I just wish...
When she trailed off, Luke finished her thought for her.
It's over and done, I'd guess. At least for tonight, anyway.
She turned, taking her time as she examined the barn.
I sure hope so.
Luke's feet scraped at the ground, as if trying to unearth words in the dust.
I assume your friends are inside?
Her gaze flickered over the figures milling around the barn doors and beyond.
A bunch of us are here, she said. I go to Wake Forest and my roommate at the sorority decided that what I really needed was a girl's night out.
They're probably wondering where you are.
I doubt it, she said. They're having too much fun for that.
From a tree bordering the corral came the sound of an owl calling from a low-hanging branch, and both of them turned at the sound.
You want me to walk you back inside? In case there's any trouble, I mean?
She surprised him by shaking her head.
No, I think it's best if I stay out here for a little longer. It'll give Brian a chance to cool off.
Only if he quits drinking,
Luke thought.
Let it go, it's not your business,
he reminded himself.
Would you rather be alone, then?
A look of amusement flashed across her face.
Why? Am I boring you?
No,
he said, shaking his head.
Not at all. I just didn't want...
I'm kidding. She stepped to the railing and propped her elbows on the fence. She leaned forward and turned toward him, smiling. Hesitantly, Luke joined her at the railing. In the distance, she took in the view, appreciating the gently rolling hills common to this part of the state. Luke studied her features silently, noting the small stud in her earlobe, trying to figure out what to say.
What year are you in college?
He finally asked. He knew it was an inane question, but it was all he could come up with. I'm a senior.
That makes you 22?
21. She half turned in his direction. And you?
Older than that.
Not by much, I'd guess. Did you go to college?
It wasn't really my thing.
He shrugged. And you ride bulls for a living?
Sometimes,
he answered.
When I stay on, that is. But other times I'm just a toy the bull gets to play with until I can get away.
She raised an eyebrow. You were pretty impressive out there today.
You remember me?
Of course. You were the only one who rode them all. You won, right?
I had a pretty good night,
he admitted. She brought her hands together. So it's Luke...
Collins,
he finished. That's right, she said. The announcer was going on and on about you before your ride.
And?
To be honest, I wasn't paying much attention. At the time, I didn't know you'd end up coming to my rescue. He listened for traces of sarcasm but detected none, which surprised him. Hooking a thumb toward the tractor tire, he pointed out,
Those other guys came over to help, too.
But they didn't intervene. You did. She let the comment sink in for a moment. Can I ask you a question, though? She went on. I've been wondering about it all night. Luke picked at a sliver on the railing.
Go ahead.
Why on earth would you ride bulls? It seems like you could get killed out there.
That's about right,
he thought. It's what everyone wanted to know. As usual, he answered it the way he always did.
It's just something I've always wanted to do. I started when I was a little kid. I think I rode my first calf when I was 4 years old, and I was riding steers by the third grade.
But how did you start in the first place? Who got you into it?
My dad, he said. He was in rodeo for years. Saddle bronc.
Is that different than bulls?
It's pretty much the same rules, except that it's on a horse. 8 seconds holding on with one hand while the animal tries to throw you.
Except that horses don't have horns the size of baseball bats. And they're smaller and not as mean. He considered it.
That's about right, I'd guess.
Then why don't you compete in saddle bronc instead of riding bulls? He watched her brush her hair back with both hands, trying to capture the flyaways.
That's kind of a long story. Do you really want to know?
I wouldn't have asked if I didn't. He fiddled with his hat.
It's just a hard life, I guess. My dad would drive 100,000 miles a year going from rodeo to rodeo just to qualify for the national finals rodeo. That kind of travel is hard on the family. And not only was he gone almost all the time, but back then, it didn't pay much. After travel expenses and entry fees, he probably would have been better off working minimum wage. He didn't want that for me. And when he heard that bull riders were about to start their own tour, he thought it had a pretty good chance to be successful. That's when he got me into it. There's still a lot of travel, but the events are on weekends, and usually I can get in and out pretty quick. The purses are bigger, too.
So he was right.
He had great instincts. About everything.
The words came out without thinking, and when he saw her expression, he knew she'd picked up on it. He sighed.
He passed away 6 years ago.
Her gaze didn't waver, and impulsively she reached out, touching his arm. I'm sorry, she said. Though her hand barely grazed his arm, the sensation lingered.
It's okay,
he said, straightening up. Already he could feel the post-ride soreness settling in, and he tried to concentrate on that instead.
Anyway, that's the reason I ride bulls.
And you like it? That was a tough one.
For a long time, it was how he'd defined himself, no question about it. But now, he didn't know how to answer because he wasn't sure himself. "Why are you so interested?" he countered.
"I don't know," she said. "Maybe because it's a world I know nothing about? Or maybe I'm just naturally curious.
Then again, I might just be making conversation." "Which one is it?"
"I could tell you," she said, her green eyes seductive in the moonlight. "But how much fun would that be? The world needs a little mystery."
Something stirred in him at the veiled challenge in her voice.
"Where are you from?"
he asked, feeling himself being reeled in and liking it.
"I take it you're not from around here."
"Why would you think that? Do I have an accent?"
"I suppose that depends on where you're from. Up north, I'd be the one with the accent. But I can't really tell where you're from."
"I'm from New Jersey," she paused. "No jokes, please."
"Why would I joke? I like New Jersey."
"Have you ever been there?"
"I've been to Trenton. I rode in a few events at the Sovereign Bank Arena. Do you know where that is?"
"I know where Trenton is," she answered. "It's south of where I live, closer to Philadelphia. I'm up north by the city."
"Have you been to Trenton?"
"A handful of times, but I've never been to the arena,
or to a rodeo for that matter.
This is my first time."
"What did you think?"
"Other than being impressed? I thought you were all crazy."
He laughed, charmed by her frankness.
"You know my last name, but I didn't catch yours."
"Danko," she said, then anticipating his next question. "My dad is from Slovakia."
"That's near Kansas, right?"
She blinked. Her mouth opened and closed, and just as she was about to explain the concept of Europe to him, he raised his hands.
"Joking," he said. "I know where it is. Central Europe, part of what was once Czechoslovakia. I just wanted to see your reaction."
"And?"
"I should have taken a picture to show my friends."
She scowled before nudging against him.
"That's not nice."
"But it was funny."
"Yeah," she admitted.
"It was funny."
"So if your dad is from Slovakia..."
"My mom is French. They moved here a year before I was born."
He turned toward her.
"No kidding."
"You sound surprised."
"I don't know if I've ever met a French Slovakian before."
He paused.
"Hell, I don't know if I've ever met someone from New Jersey before."
When she laughed, he felt something relax in him, and he knew he wanted to hear the sound again.
"And you live close by?"
"Not too far. A little north of Winston-Salem. I'm right outside of King."
"Sounds fancy."
"That's one thing it isn't. It's a small town with friendly people, but that's about it. We have a ranch up there."
"We? My mom and I?"
"Well, actually, it's her ranch. I just live and work there."
"Like, a real ranch? With cows and horses and pigs?"
"It's even got a barn that makes this one here look new."
She surveyed the barn behind them.
"I doubt that. Maybe I'll show you one day. Take you horseback riding and everything."
Their eyes met, holding for a beat, and again she reached out to touch his arm.
"I think I'd like that, Luke."
4. Sophia. Sophia wasn't sure exactly why she'd said it. The words had simply come out before she could stop them. It occurred to her to try to backtrack or play it off somehow, but for whatever reason, she realized that she didn't want to. It had less to do with his appearance, despite the fact that Marcia had been exactly right. He was unmistakably good-looking in a boyish kind of way, with a friendly, open smile highlighted by dimples. He was lean and wiry, too, his broad shoulders a contrast to his narrow hips, and the unruly mass of brown curls under his battered hat was definitely sexy. What really stood out were his eyes, though. She'd always been a sucker for beautiful eyes. His were a summer blue, vivid and bright enough to make you suspect colored contacts,
as ludicrous as she knew Luke would have found such things.
She had to admit, it helped that he so obviously found her attractive. Growing up, she'd always been gawky with long, skinny legs, zero in the hips department, and prone to the occasional bout of acne. It wasn't until she was a junior in high school that she'd needed more than a training bra. All that had begun to change during her senior year, although it mostly made her feel self-conscious and awkward. Even now, when evaluating herself in the mirror, she still sometimes caught sight of the teenage girl she used to be, and it surprised her to realize that no one else could. As flattering as Luke's appreciation was, what appealed to her most was the way he made everything appear easy, from the unflappable way he'd handled Brian to their meandering conversation. She never had the sense that he was trying to impress her, but his quiet self-possession made him come across as very different from the guys she met at Wake, especially Brian. She also liked that he was comfortable leaving her alone with her thoughts. A lot of people felt the need to fill every silence, but Luke simply watched the bulls, content to keep his own counsel. After a while, she realized that the music from the barn had stopped temporarily, the band on a short intermission, no doubt, and she wondered whether Marcia would try to find her. She found herself hoping that she wouldn't. Not yet, anyway. "What's it like living on a ranch?" she asked, breaking the silence. "What do you do all day?" She watched as he crossed one leg over the other, the toe of his boot in the dirt.
"A bit of everything, I guess. There's always something to do."
"Such as?" He absently massaged one hand with the other as he thought about it.
"Well, for starters, horses and pigs and chickens need to be fed first thing in the morning, and their stalls need to be cleaned. The cattle have to be monitored. I have to check the herd every day to make sure they're okay. No eye infections, no cuts from the barbed wire, things like that. If one is hurt or sick, I try to take care of it right away. After that, there are pastures to irrigate, and a few times a year I have to move all the cattle from one pasture to the next so they always have good grass. And a couple times a year I have to vaccinate the herd, which means roping them one by one and keeping them separated afterwards. We also have a pretty good-sized vegetable garden for our own use, and I've got to keep that going, too."
She blinked. "That's all?" she joked.
"Not quite," he continued. "We sell pumpkins, blueberries, honey, and Christmas trees to the public. So sometimes I spend part of my day planting or weeding or watering or collecting the honey from the hives. And when the public comes out, I have to be there to tie down the trees or help carry pumpkins to the car, whatever. And then, of course, there's always something broken that needs repairs, whether it's the tractor or the gator or the fencing or the barn or the roof on the house."
He offered a rueful expression.
"Trust me, there's always something to do."
"You can't possibly do all that alone," Sophia said in disbelief.
"No, my mom does quite a bit, and we have a guy who's been working for us for years, Jose. He handles what we can't, essentially. And then when we have to, we'll bring in crews for a couple of days to help shape the trees or whatever."
She frowned. "What do you mean by shape the trees? You mean the Christmas trees?"
"In case you were wondering, they don't grow in pretty triangles. You have to prune them as they're growing to make them come out the way they do."
"Really?"
"And you have to roll the pumpkins, too. You want to keep them from rotting on the bottom, but you also want them to be round, or at least oval, or no one will buy them."
She wrinkled her nose. "So you literally roll them?"
"Yep. And you have to be careful not to break the stem."
"I never knew that."
"A lot of people don't. But you probably know a lot of things that I don't."
"You knew where Slovakia was?"
"I always lacked history and geography. But if you ask me about chemistry or algebra, I'd probably be lost."
"I never liked math that much either."
"But you were good at it. I'll bet you were among the best in your class."
"Why would you say that?"
"You go to Wake Forest," he answered. "I'd guess you aced every subject growing up."
"What do you study in there?"
"Not ranching, obviously."
He flashed those dimples again. She picked at the railing with her fingernail. "I'm majoring in art history."
"Is that something you were always interested in?"
"Not at all," she said. "When I first got to Wake, I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life, and I took the kind of classes that all freshmen take, hoping I'd stumble on something. I wanted to find something that made me feel passionate, you know?" When she paused, she could feel his attention on her, focused and sure.
His genuine interest reminded her again of how different he was from the guys she knew on campus. Anyway, when I was a sophomore, I signed up for a class in French Impressionism, mostly to fill out my schedule, not for any particular reason. But the professor was amazing, intelligent and interesting and inspirational, everything a professor should be. He made art come alive and feel relevant somehow. And after a couple of classes, it just clicked for me. I knew what I wanted to do, and the more art history classes I took, the more I knew how much I wanted to be part of that world.
I'll bet you're glad you took the class, huh?
Yeah.
My parents, not so much. They wanted me to major in pre-med or pre-law or accounting, something that will lead to a job when I graduate.
He tugged at his shirt.
As far as I know, it's having a degree that's important. You can probably get a job doing almost anything.
That's what I tell them. But my real dream is to work in a museum.
So do it.
It's not as easy as you might think. There are a lot of art history majors out there and only a handful of entry-level positions to go around. Plus, a lot of museums are struggling, which means they're cutting back on their staff. I was lucky enough to get an interview at the Denver Art Museum. It's not a paid position, it's more of an internship thing. But they said that there's a possibility it could evolve into a paying position. Which, of course, begs the question as to how I'd be able to pay my bills while working there. And I wouldn't want my parents to support me. Not that they could afford it. I have a younger sister at Rutgers and two more starting college soon, and... She said nothing, momentarily daunted. Luke seemed to read her mind and didn't press.
What do your parents do?
He asked instead. They own a deli. Specialty cheeses and meats, fresh-baked bread, homemade sandwiches and soups.
Good food?
Great food.
So if I ever go in there, what should I order?
You can't go wrong with anything. My mom makes an amazing mushroom soup. That's my favorite, but we're probably best known for our cheesesteaks. At lunch, there's always a long line, and that's what most people order. It even won an award a couple of years back. Best sandwich in the city.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. The newspaper ran a contest, and people voted and everything. My dad framed the certificate, and it hangs right by the register. Maybe I'll show it to you one day. He brought his hands together, mimicking her earlier stance.
I think I'd like that, Sophia.
She laughed, acknowledging his comeback and liking how he said her name. It came out slower than she was used to, but also smoother, the syllables rolling off his tongue in a pleasing, unrushed cadence. She reminded herself that they were strangers, but somehow it didn't feel that way. She leaned back against the fence post. So, those other guys who came over, did you come here with them? He peered in their direction, then turned back to her.
No,
he said.
Actually, I only knew one of them. My friends are inside. Probably ogling your friends if you want to know the truth.
How come you're not in there with them? He used a finger to push the brim of his hat back.
I was. For a while, anyway. But I wasn't in the mood to do much talking, so I came out here.
You seem to be talking fine right now.
I guess I am.
He gave a sheepish grin.
There's not much to tell, other than what I've already said. I ride bulls and work on the family ranch. My life ain't all that interesting.
She studied him. Then tell me something you don't usually tell people.
Like what?
He said. Anything, she said, lifting her hands. What were you thinking about earlier when you were standing out here all alone? Luke shifted uncomfortably and glanced away. He said nothing at first. Instead, buying time, he folded his hands before him on the railing.
To really understand, I think you'd need to see it, he said. But the problem is, it's not exactly here.
Where is it? She asked, puzzled.
Over there,
he said, motioning toward the corrals. Sophia hesitated. Everyone knew the stories. Girl meets guy who comes across as nice and pleasant, but as soon as he gets her alone... And yet, as she regarded him, she didn't hear any warning bells. For some reason, she trusted him, and not simply because he'd come to her aid. It just didn't feel like he was coming on to her. She even had the sense that if she asked him to leave, he'd walk away and she'd never talk to him again. Besides, he'd made her laugh tonight. In the short time they'd spent together, she'd forgotten all about Brian.
Okay,
she responded,
I'm game. If he was surprised by her answer, he didn't show it. Instead, he simply nodded, and putting both hands on the top railing, he hopped gracefully over the fence.
Show off, she teased.
Bending down, she squeezed through the rails, and a moment later they started toward the corrals. As they crossed the pasture toward the fence on the far side, Luke maintained a comfortable distance. Sophia studied the undulations of the fence line as it rode the contours of the land, marveling at how different this place was from where she'd grown up. It occurred to her that she'd come to appreciate the quiet, almost austere beauty of this landscape. North Carolina was home to 1,000 small towns, each with its own character and history, and she'd come to understand why many locals would never leave. In the distance, the pines and oaks, scrabbled together, formed an impenetrable scrim of blackness. Behind them, the music gradually faded, the distant sound of meadow crickets emerging in its wake. Despite the darkness, she felt Luke appraising her, though he was trying not to be obvious about it.
There's a shortcut after the next fence, he said. We can get to my truck from there.
The comment caught her off guard. Your truck?
Don't worry, he said, raising his hands. We're not leaving. We're not even getting in. It's just that I think you'll be able to see better from the bed. It's higher and more comfortable. I've got a couple of lawn chairs in the bed that I can set up.
You have lawn chairs in the bed of your truck? She squinted in disbelief.
I've got a lot of stuff in the bed of my truck.
Of course he did. Didn't everyone? Marcia would have a field day with this. By then, they'd reached the next fence, and the glow from the arena lights was growing stronger. Again, he hopped over it effortlessly, but this time the slats were placed too narrowly for her to squeeze through. Instead, she climbed up, perching on top before swinging her legs over. She took his hands as she jumped down, liking their calloused warmth. They trekked to a nearby gate and veered toward the trucks. Luke angled toward a shiny black one with big tires and a rack of lights across the roof, the only one parked with the nose in the opposite direction. He opened the tailgate and hopped up into the back. Again, he held out his hands, and with a quick lift, she was standing next to him in the bed of the truck. Luke turned around and began rummaging, moving things aside, his back to her. She crossed her arms, wondering what Marcia was going to think of all this. She could imagine her questions already.
We're talking about the cute one, right? He took you where? What were you thinking? What if he was crazy?
Meanwhile, Luke continued to sort through various items. She heard a metallic clunk as he finally reappeared beside her with the chair, the kind that most people brought to the beach. After opening it, he set it down in the bed of the truck and motioned toward it.
Go ahead and sit. It'll be ready in just a bit.
She stood without moving, again picturing Marcia's skeptical face, but then decided, why not? The whole night had felt slightly surreal, so finding herself sitting in a lawn chair in the bed of a pickup owned by a bull rider was almost a natural extension. She reflected on the fact that aside from Brian, the last time she'd been alone with a guy was the summer before she first came to Wake, when Tony Russo had taken her to the prom. They'd known each other for years, but past graduation it hadn't amounted to much. He was cute and smart. He was heading to Princeton in the fall. But he was all hands by their third date, and Luke set the other chair beside her, interrupting her thoughts. Instead of sitting, however, he hopped down from the bed and went around to the driver's side door and leaned inside the cab. A moment later, the radio came on. Country Western. Of course, she thought to herself, amused. What else would it be? After rejoining her, he took a seat and stretched out his legs in front of him, crossing one leg over the other.
Comfy?
He asked. Getting there. She squirmed a bit, conscious of how close they were to each other.
Do you want to trade chairs?
It's not that. It's this, she said with an all-encompassing wave. Sitting in chairs in the back of your truck. It's new to me.
You don't do this in New Jersey?
We do stuff, like see movies, go out to eat, hang out at a friend's house.
I take it you didn't do any of those things growing up?
Of course I did.
I still do.
What was the last movie you went to?
What's a movie?
It took her a second to realize he was teasing, and he laughed at her rapidly changing expression. Then he motioned toward the rails.
They're bigger up close, don't you think?
He asked. When Sophia turned, she saw a bull lumbering slowly toward them, not more than a few feet away, chest muscles rippling.